Five. Chris, the topic we will be discussing today is, how do you handle aging and different ages in your tabletop games?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to be young forever. Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, you made us a new table, and you asked me right before we jumped on, hey, do you want it to be a mystery? I'm like, yes, absolutely. So I'm excited for this topic. I have given it zero thought.
I also have not given them thought, so I don't know what we're going to discuss, but I think it'll, but those are often our most fun discussions.
Yes, I think it'll be, really good. So you also mentioned before we jumped on that you had something that you wanted to, a book that you've been reading, right?
I've been rereading a science fiction novel. It's I read it a couple of years ago, and then the book club I'm in picked it to read, so I'm rereading it again. It's a novel called A Memory Called Empire by Arkady Martine. I might be butchering her name.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this one?
No, I haven't heard of that author or this book.
It lives in the same space as like Anne Leckie's novels. The reason I mention it here is because it does have some of my GMing gears spinning. It is a political space opera.
Okay.
So there's relatively little action. The main character is the ambassador to like a massive space empire that's modeled after Byzantium. And so she represents a minor state on the edges of this empire that is that feels the pull of the empire as sort of the center of civilization, but also wishes to retain its sort of identity and independence to some extent.
Okay.
That's a rich, very historical sort of scenario. I've just been interested because I've never run an RPG like a purely political game.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, 85% just politics, and the tense scenes are all conversations with people and who got a clever insinuation in, or who got the upper hand through some sort of wordplay. I really enjoy it. It's a good book. I recommend it. But it just made me realize that's a tradition of fantasy and science fiction literature, and it has never really come up much in the games I've run, except as isolated in the campaign. There might be one scene where you appear in the king's court and have a political thing or whatever. So
yeah,
I'm just curious, have you ever run a game that was, or played in a game that was more based around social interaction and politicking than it was about traditional adventuring?
Yeah, it comes up every once in a while. So the games that I play that Matt Wilson runs, like, I mean, he's a history buff and he likes politics as well. Or I don't know, liking politics, that's maybe not exactly what he likes, but he enjoys thinking about politics. Yeah, so I mean, we've had some.
But no one enjoys thinking about politics.
No,
but
yeah,
but
yeah,
carry
yeah.
on.
But we must, and we must endure. Yeah. So, so it comes up, you know, quite a bit in there. So I mean, I think he also likes running action games too, right? So like, there's a lot of action. Very rarely do we kind of sit down and we're just like having, you know, long political conversations around a table or anything like that. But it does come up. I find those are hard for me to play in, hard for me to run in, like those sort of extended social situations, because like I just don't feel like I'm personally sort of adept at that in real life. Like I will, not oftentimes, but sometimes I'll kind of get out of a meeting or something and ask someone like how it went, and they'll mention something like, oh, I missed that entirely. Like I missed this subtext that was happening. But that's fine. It's something that's interesting to me. I mean, what I'm surprised to hear is, so like, it sounds like you're enjoying that book, right? Is it really just kind of people mingling around talking to each other? Are you getting kind of like, do they go off on by themselves and kind of like come up with their strategy and come together? Like, yeah, I'm just,
it really is, and I don't think it's a book for everyone. Like, it's kind of a slow burn. I mean so I just finished a chapter. It was a big, long, exciting chapter, and it was just attending the emperor's ball.
Oh, cool.
And the main character has like maybe, you know, three or four different social interactions that are like super laden with portent, you know, in the course of that, the banquet. As an old person, speaking of our topic, aging, the games I grew up with, you know, had these incredibly elaborate structures for running adventure and action scenes, right? Mm-hmm. Because I don't know how to fight a gnoll. There's ample rules in all these games I played to do that. I also don't know how to like politic at the king's court.
Yeah.
But at least in the games, you know, I was playing when I was younger, they had all these rules for combat, and then everything else was just kind of like, well, just wing it, like mm-hmm. just role play this out. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
I know there's been a large number of games over the last 20 years, I'd say, that have tried to expand the space of the rules to kind of encompass social interactions as well.
Mm-hmm.
But with only a handful of exceptions, nobody goes as rule heavy with social scenes as they do with combat scenes. I realize mm-hmm. there's exceptions. So if yes, you're thinking, yeah, yeah. but yeah. Well, what about game X? Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
And I'm a little surprised that it's never bled into like the big mainstream games like D&D. Plenty of trends and ideas have bled into D&D, Pathfinder, the biggies, right? But mm-hmm. there still is no, you know, there's like no skill or feat tree or anything like that, or initiative round process for conducting a debate.
Yes,
in the king's court, right? Would you enjoy seeing that stuff in the D&D rules, or would you feel like that's not what the rules are here to do?
Yeah, I mean, the rules would have to be set up for it. So the like the game that I'm playing in right now, we our character sheets, right? We have a health score and a morale score, right? Like it, right, it's like HP and morale, yeah. sort of our two pools of like if either of these get to zero, like you're knocked out of. Out of like, yeah, out of the story, basically.
Yep.
And so like morale can take a hit by someone browbeating you or, you know, convincing you of something, right? Something or like, yeah, shaming you or like whatever, right? So like it has, there's some like built-in rules for that in this system. And I think there's a lot of systems where they kind of hint at it, but like D&D doesn't give you a lot of like mechanics to really work with there. Like you were saying, it just sort of all will come down to like, you do a persuasion roll, right? Like,
right, exactly.
Contested persuasion roll, like, right? Like, so you just, there's just like a single roll there versus I think what really happens in some of these, like, whatever, courtroom or, you know, banquet scenes is like you're going back and forth, right? Like, so there's, yeah. if you were to really do it, there'd be lots of little rolls as you're going through, or maybe some sort of like, I don't know, you gamify it in some other way.
You maneuver to give yourself an advantage. Like, if like in a combat, you're moving around the map and in such a way to set things up to mm-hmm. make your attack more effective or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's no real tactics to social interaction in like say D&D.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, I think that's probably okay. I mean, I think like if I'm reaching for, you know, fantasy combat game, like that's what I want. Right. And so like you mentioned, there's tons of other like indie RPGs that are exploring the space a little bit more. But there isn't like one that I know of that it's like everybody has coalesced around and said like, yes, this is the one if you want to do social interaction.
Yeah.
Cause I think there's different varieties of that too. Like I'm thinking about like, so you can have like this politics stuff, but I'm also thinking about like Jane Austen or Bridgerton, right? Like those kinds of social interactions too, right? Where it's like, some of the mechanisms might be the same of like, you know, you're talking to people, you're pulling them off to the side to like get them separated from their advisors. Like, right. There's like all this stuff that can kind of happen, but like your outcome can be so different that it feels wrong. If you were playing like a Jane Austen game, you'd probably want one of those skills to be flirting or, you know, something like yeah. that, where if you're playing like a more politics heavy game, you might be like, I don't know, power or like, you know, global knowledge, or I don't know, right? Like you can have a ton of these different mechanics, but yeah, so it's like I think you'd need a system that can kind of abstract some of those individual like abilities and levers that you might have in a social interaction, and like yeah, then also apply some sort of like hit point based thing to it, or some sort of score yeah. system. Yeah, and I could see it working pretty well too. Like I think there has to be a system someone has to kind of think it through. It sounds like both you and I are not the ones, the sort of GMs who are like, I really need this in my life, but I know there's a lot of people who are like, absolutely. Yeah.
And if you do have a system that does this really well, or mm-hmm. if you've run a game that was just all romance in mm-hmm. the emperor's court or something like that, I'd actually love to hear about that.
Yeah.
What you used and then what the experience was like.
Yeah. There's a right? Like, this reminds me of Final Fantasy VI, right? So again, right, I'm going to reference a 30-year-old video game now, but yeah, there's a really cool scene. Right, so most of that game is like combat and stuff, but there is a really cool scene where you, as the, like, the rebels have gotten an audience with the, like, you know, the emperor, like you got an audience with the big bad guy. Right. And like, it is like a sit down at a banquet sort of scene. And so he's like asking you questions and you get a score based on how you answer the questions, right? Like, you know, like, are you going to ally yourself with Emperor? Are you just like telling him that he's, you know, he's awful, right? Because like at that point of the game, he has enough power that he could just kind of crush you right there if he needed to. Yeah, but it's like, it's a fun scene because it's such a sequence break from the mechanics that you're used to in that game. Like all of a sudden you're having a conversation where you're getting these dialogue choices that like, they matter in like as much as dialogue choices could matter in like kind of that era of gaming. Yeah. And so it's like, it really puts a lot of importance on the story in that moment. Cause like, if you do really well, you can get, I think you end up getting some items and stuff like that. Right. Like, so there's some sort of mechanical advantage to you in combat later on, yep. But also just in terms of the story, if you're putting yourself in the place there, it's like, oh, this is interesting to think about. Like, I'm not just mashing buttons through the story or, you know, to get to the next combat. It's like the game is asking you to sort of slow down and think about this in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's always, it's stuck with me. Right. Like, you know, I played that as a young kid. Right. And that stuck with me as like a really good example of like, oh, like the video games can kind of tell these unique stories. And same thing with tabletop games. Right.
Yeah.
You can just abstract it out. Like, I don't know. Yeah. You go to the Emperor, you make your one persuasion roll and then you move on. But I think there is definitely something that you can do in that space.
When I was reading that big Emperor's ball scene, I was thinking, you know, like, how would I run this? I think I would have like 8 clocks, like in it's a big ball. There's like, you know, 300 people there.
Yeah.
And there's like 8 clocks, more than you can go engage with. So you have to make strategic choices about which ones you care about. And then here's a clock of like, convince this person to change the trade policy towards your homeland. Here, this group of people, you can just establish rapport with them, which might pay dividends down the line. Or, you know, in this one, you need to avoid being embarrassed by a rival or something, and using some sort of blades clock, you know, system to make those a little bit more than just like a pass fail persuade roll, you know. But I don't know, it got me kind of thinking, and the games I have in my near future don't really have a lot of space for this kind of scene, but But maybe I'll see if I can like try and squeeze one in somehow.
I mean, I like as you describe that sounds really cool. If there's, I don't know, like you could even, if there's sort of 6 clocks that they know about and 2 that they don't, that are happening. Yeah. And then there's sort of one hidden clock that's, you know, off in the servants' quarters if they choose to go, go look at it. But I mean, you could set up a lot of the upcoming story that way too. Just like, yeah, based on how things go. Yeah,
it could be a really fun with like a, you know, with a diverse group of characters, right? You know, like you go and do the drinking contest with that because you've got the high constitution or, you know, whatever it is. And you go flirt with the prince because, you know, I think it could be a lot of fun. But.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. All right. So real quick. So I've been reading a book called The Westing Game by Ellen Raskin, I think her name is. Yeah, yes. Ellen Raskin. Yeah. So I hadn't heard of this book at all. Brought it up in, it came up in one of our group chats, and like, I was just like, this sounds like my sort of book. So I've been reading about it, but I mean, talk about like a book. It's I don't know exactly how you describe it. It's almost like a murder mystery, but like all the characters are sort of, trying to figure out the murder too, as you're trying to figure it out as well. But it's just like this fascinating group of characters, right? Like, again, talking about like, you know, our topic at hand about aging and stuff. It's like this multi-generational cast of characters all sort of dealing with their own stuff while also trying to figure out how to solve this. Like who murdered this wealthy, well, you know, millionaire, like these days he'd be a billionaire, right? You know, this wealthy millionaire who's going to leave one of them money if they can figure out who did it. So I'm enjoying it quite a bit. It's been a little slow going just because of my life at the moment, but like, yeah, it's really good. So I'm glad
am I dreaming it, or did they just find like an unpublished sequel or something to that?
You might not be dreaming that. If that does sound familiar, but I okay. don't quote me on it.
maybe I am dreaming it too. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. So it's good. But yeah, that has me thinking a lot about like the book. I'm maybe halfway through it, and there's sort of just like one set of clues that everybody's been given, but everybody also like, but because everybody's competing against each other, no one wants to share clues. So like you as a reader have access to all these clues that you can kind of like be piecing together, but like there's also all this maneuvering that's happening and like living and life that's happening too, with this group of characters too. So it's not like they are locked in a room and they all have to figure this out right now. It's like they are kind of free to go about with their business and they're trying to figure it out as like this thing on the side of everything else they're doing. It's just a very unique take on, I think, that style of story that I don't think I've seen that anywhere else. Yeah, so I don't know. It's good. I recommend
sounds
it.
Really cool.
Yeah.
So, hey, shall we jump into our topic?
Yes. Yeah. Can you read it again for us just so we remember?
Yeah. So how do you handle aging and age differences? And I guess just the topic, just the topic of age generally in mm-hmm. your games. And so here is when I put this on the table. Like, here's what I kind of had in mind. I don't have an agenda for this conversation. Mm-hmm. I want to see where it goes. But like, so you and I think have both run detective kids type of games or mm-hmm. played in them. You and I have both run and played in plenty of games where I think the heroes are all sort of like 20 something action heroes. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
Have you ever run or played in a game where you or one of the players had a character who is, where their age was mechanically important, had a mechanical effect on the game, or just where their age had a strong role-playing effect on the game?
Yeah, we were, let's see, I think it was a Blades in the Dark game that I was playing, and one of the characters, one of the characters they were playing was like, kind of like a mother or grandmotherly figure. Mm-hmm. And like that came up quite a bit as a fun role playing, like kind of a fun role playing thing. I cannot remember the character's name, but yeah, so that was a really fun thing. And they also like did a lot of like baking as well in the game. So in Blades, right, there's this, you can, if you want to, there's like the whole like ghost field in there too, like so you can see ghosts and stuff. So that character could see ghosts. And part of that, I think, was like their baking gave them access to that too, which was a really, really fun detail. But it's it doesn't come up a lot, and I think it's because like, you know, it is it can be an uncomfortable topic, right, about aging. But I mean, there's a lot there too. Like, I think the most I've done with this is having like retired adventurers in town as like NPCs and stuff, and it's like, well, I mean, you can't really recruit this person because they're retired. Like, they're not going back. Like, they were a level 5 or level 10 fighter at one point in their life, but no longer. Right. And it's kind of fun to, I think, have some of that in there. But I'm also trying to think now about like, you know, like, how would I even play like an aging elderly, you know, fighter? Like, would there be mechanical disadvantages, or would it just be flavor on top, like role playing?
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I feel like most of the systems I've seen that have mechanics for age, you know, the older, if you are playing a quote older character here, and define older, I guess, by whatever species or being you're playing, right?
Yeah.
You know, your physical stats take some kind of a hit, but sometimes they toss you a little bonus to some mental stats, right? Mm-hmm. Like your wisdom is higher, but your strength is lower or something.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty straightforward. Where my mind goes is just thinking about, I am about to hit like 50. So I'm an old man.
Oh, yes, and, ancient.
Yeah. And just, you know, just thinking about myself at age 20 versus myself at age 50, you know, like we're the same person, but dramatically different. Like, so an adventure hook that works for a gang of 22-year-olds would be radically different than like an adventure hook that convinces a bunch of 48-year-olds to take action, right? So like your 45-year-old fighter will have, you know, the goblins have captured the water mill outside town. 22-year-olds are gonna want to go and kill the goblins.
Yeah,
maybe your 45-year-olds are gonna be like, how can we resolve this in a long-term way, right, that doesn't disrupt, you know, that doesn't disrupt the economics of the town, right?
Yeah, so that doesn't I'm
being a little facetious with that. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So like I feel like if you want to really play into it, your game would, you know, if you really are going to be role playing people from different age brackets, you know, mm-hmm. it's a lot. It would be more fun, but maybe more of a hassle if you go beyond just like, oh yeah, I have -2 constitution, but +2 wisdom. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, a lot of thoughts. Yeah, it is interesting because I think like, yeah, real world 50-year-olds would definitely approach that problem very, very differently. I mean, probably they would find a bunch of 22-year-olds to send, send over to deal with the goblins, right? But like, I mean, that is a solution. I mean, it just sort of, it gets down to, again, I think like your system and sort of what the system wants you to do. Like, I mean, I think if you're playing, yeah, right. If you're supposed to go do combat, like you're going to go do combat, but like, yeah,
approaching it
a little differently. I mean, I think it's like, it is fun to think about it from a player motivation side. Something we've talked about before on the podcast is the thought of like your heroes having family back home, you know, that like that's the reason they're adventuring, right? Yeah. And it's sort of easier to think about like the 50 some person having family back home versus like the 20-year-old. It's like, you know, they're unencumbered by everything, like maybe their parents died in some sort of like, you know, crash and they've got a cool scar, and it's like, you know, it's like, so it's like they're the lone wolf, but like, yeah, thinking about someone that has roots and stuff, like their motivation for adventuring is going to be quite a bit different.
You know, just their assessment of like risk and reward is going to be different, right? Yeah. You know, like if you're playing an 18-year-old D&D fighter, I mean, they think they can't die.
Yes.
Like, right? I mean, yes, like, whereas if you're playing a 45-year-old, their joints have started aching, and like they are thinking about like if I win this fight, but I get hit and I get infected or something like that, that's going to like there's a whole category of things that like different age brackets just won't prioritize as much. And like your 18-year-old is not going to prioritize like the long-term effects of what's going on here.
Yeah.
And they're not going to take like danger to themselves as seriously as someone else.
Yeah. So. I saw some stat yesterday, and like I'm gonna get all the details wrong, but the general idea of it is I think instructive. It was like after the age of 40, like 90% of people like will never run ever again. Something like that, right? Like, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's just the thought of like, I don't know, like all the stuff that you sort of take for granted that young people do. Like, you know, we've both got kids, right? Like, they're always like running, they're jumping off of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And like, think about like, when's the last time you just like got up on the couch and jumped off of it as high as you could just to sort of see what would happen. It's like, you just like at a certain point in your life, you're like, I don't do that anymore. You
know? Right.
Yeah. And it's not like, I mean, sure, it'd still be super fun to do and everything, but it's just like, yeah, you're thinking about like, well, if I roll my ankle or like, you know, I break the couch or, you know, that sort of stuff that just doesn't occur to a 4-year-old at all. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's that element of it. I think that part might be sort of it'd be hard to gamify. I mean, yeah, you can definitely role play it, and it's just sort of something you remind. Yeah. The player would have to get into that. I am thinking about like now about how could you bring in some of those bonds and those relationships, like those intergenerational relationships, into the party itself. Hmm. So like, I mean, just like the obvious one is like, it would be fascinating to run a game where like grandfather, father and son were all like, you know, on the adventuring road together. Everybody's kind of playing a different person in that, and it's like thinking about how that group would be looking out for each other and like aware of each other's age in a different way that it would be than if you just had an adventuring party and it's like, and there was one random person who was like 80 in there, right? It's like,
yeah
you have those kind of familial bonds. I think that would be, it'd be very different. It'd be like, I don't know, maybe grandpa still is like a really good shot with a bow and arrow, but you're not going to have him be the one to first climb the mountain or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
Thinking of bonds with other PCs. Like, so, you know, I'm the parent of, I guess now 2 teenagers, one older one and one younger one.
Yeah.
And like, if, you know, if you had some sort of bond system or relationship system that was mechanically represented, you know, even that would have to just function differently for people in different ages, right?
Mm-hmm.
If a 50-year-old gets insulted, like, you know, you get insulted by a party member, maybe your relationship meter goes down with that person by 2.
Mm-hmm.
But like a teenager that gets insulted, or their feelings are hurt, and like that relationship meter is going to go down by 30.
Yeah, right? It goes like, down to whatever negative number is possible.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Like, yeah. So like in a lot of ways, just like the just think of the intensity of like emotion and relationships and stuff like that in youth. Like, I mean, I just marveled at looking at my own kids and trying to remember what that was like. In some ways, the rules of the universe just are just different for you at one end of the age spectrum versus the other.
Yeah. It's like, you almost want to have to make them. Yeah. It's like, you almost want to have like people have to make like a reaction score, like just a general, like how much did this get to you, get to your role. And it's like that. Yeah. That range of like, say you're playing a teenager. It's like, this is going to, you know, you're going to roll an extra D8 for everything. And then also roll again, flip a coin. And it's like, if it's positive, right, you know, you add 8. And if it's negative, you subtract 8, you know, or like,
And yeah, there's always like a 20% chance that you'll just detonate the relationship. But think also of like, you know, think of like making a persuade roll, whatever. You meet the cultist and the cultist makes a persuade roll against your PC. Your PC is 18 years old. That cultist should have like a plus 10 bonus to their persuade roll, right?
Yeah.
I mean, think of the first time someone told you about like objectivism in college, right? Yes, you were like, oh my goodness, this is incredible. Tell me more. And like, you know, if someone came in and tried to tell you about it now, you'd be like, please
shut up.
Please, I've heard it. Go away. I mean, you could get lost in all of the detail, but like, it just makes me think like, what would the fun mechanical levers be? What levers would be the most fun to like tweak based on age?
Yeah. Yeah. I think if just to actually answer that question, I think the things that'd be fun to tweak, I think would be sort of those. I mean, I'm like almost going back to what we were talking about earlier about like all the social skills, right?
Yeah.
Like just the general adeptness at like maybe navigating some of those. But then also like, also just tweaking like the strength and acrobatic skills as well, right? Because you get older, you just can't do stuff like that. I mean, I guess I would like to think that I am, you know, like a little bit smarter and keener and those sorts of things in my thinking as I get older. But I'm sure at some point, like I'm sure that's not 100% true. But then also I'm sure at some point it starts to decline again, you know, as you get even older than that too. Yeah. So it's like, again, that like, you know, that maybe that grandfather, grandparent figure in that party, it's like, like maybe there's a lot of detriments there, but there's, you know, a couple things that are pretty high as well. Yeah. But I mean, I think most of the games that I played, you know, so it doesn't matter whatever fantasy, you know, race you're playing. It's like everybody sort of just chooses whatever the, you know, the 20 to 30 something ish.
Yep.
Version of
the
that
like
is.
Movie hero age version of your character. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The movie hero version. Yeah. And so it's like, so we just often like kind of sidestep it. Right. Or you also just like, you're like, I don't really want to take a disadvantage here. That said, like I'm thinking about like when I play like say the Dark Souls games, like again, let's talk about video games. I'm finding lately that I'm often choosing, and this is just like a totally cosmetic thing, I often just choose like the old person in there, because it's just like, it's just sort of fun for me to think about. It's like, well, I mean, you're kind of a fantasy hero anyway, so like why not be able to, you know, still cast fireballs and swords and stuff like that. But also be super old. Like, so that's fun. I had one other thing that I wanted to bring up, because I know we need to wrap up. Oh yes, it was The Hobbit, right? So going back to Chris's The Hobbit corner. So we're watching.
We need like a little theme song for this section of the podcast.
It's just a Leonard Nimoy singing like Bilbo Baggins. I love the dwarves have a huge like intergenerational like gap in them too, right?
Oh,
and, like, even like Thorin does call out at certain points, like, this is a job for Feely and Keely, right? Because they're the young people. Right, they're not going to get super tired for this, and like, right, and there's jobs that are just for Balin, and like, you know, all that that sort of stuff. So like, I enjoyed that, and what's been fun is, so I'm watching the movies with my daughter, and she correctly like clocked who Feely and Keely were when they showed up.
Oh,
like, so I didn't think that. I mean, I she enjoyed reading the book. I was like, I don't know if she caught any details or whatever, but like, we're watching the movie, and she's like, oh, that's Feely and Keely before they introduce themselves. It's like, how did you know that? She's like, oh, because they're the young ones. Like,
and oh. she.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Like, yeah, so this is, it's also something where it might just be sort of wherever you're at in life too, you might notice some of those differences.
Yeah.
Differences as well. But. All right. Like I said, we need to wrap up. You got any other kind of last parting thoughts on this?
No, I don't think so. Just to say, you know, this is definitely the sort of topic where I think we don't really have the answers, and it doesn't sound like either of us is really engaged with this.
Yeah.
But as always is the case with these conversations, it just, it makes me want to pull this into, you know, a future game that I run.
Yeah.
So if you like, this is something where I would really value hearing from listeners from, actually. So if you're listening and you have had some cool experience about this in the context of a role-playing game, I'd like to hear about it. So
yeah, same here. My final like kind of party thought is like, now I really want to run a game where all the my final party thought is I completely forgot about Brindlewood Bay until this exact moment.
Oh.
That is a game that leans very heavily on, oh, I'm so sorry, because I'm sure, like, Matt, you've probably been, if you're listening to this episode, you've just been screaming at the podcast player the whole time. Brindlewood Bay is a game in which you play elderly women, right? And, like, that is a huge part of the game, is embracing that and, like, kind of thinking that through. And it's super fun and, like, super awesome.
Is that, like, a role-playing theme that you lean into or you don't, depending on your interest in it, or is it like mechanically represented?
Yes.
Like how does that work?
Yeah, it's definitely like kind of interwoven into the mechanics, right? Like, so yeah, you don't have like a, I don't know, roundhouse kick stat in that game at all. Like, right, it's very much woven into just the sorts of stories you tell and all manner of stuff. I mean, even down to sort of like all your special moves in that game are all based on sort of TV shows that you would have watched when you were younger, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, it's just like it's woven into it, and it's really cool and it's really neat, and it's the sort of thing where it's like, yeah, like thinking about that in this conversation, like I want there to be more of that, because I think as us gamers get older, we're going to want to have different ways to interact with our games. So having more sort of like ability to tell stories at different ages is always going to be a good thing. So we're not just always having to default to, like, I don't know, I've been playing a 25-year-old fighter for my whole life. Like, at some point, like, you want to play games that I think represent parts of who you are and your personality. So like, I'm hoping when I'm 80 years old, I can play the 80-year-old fighter, and there's like a compelling mechanic around that as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. Yeah. So we've been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It podcasting media network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, with John and Jess and Ben, is great. I just listened to a recent episode where John and Ben were sort of let off leash, and they got to just kind of talk and gab about games and owning things and playing games. And like, it was a really good wide ranging conversation. I find myself just appreciating them so much, and I just like get so much out of them just like thinking very hard about these like details of the hobby. So definitely go listen to them at thesplatbook.com, and then also go check out Andy and John at Zombie Strains. It's good. They keep going. Andy, what's your next movie that you've got coming up?
I think it will have come out by the time this our episode here goes live, is it Revenge of the Zombies? It might be
that
Revenge
sounds
of the
right.
Zombies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sure sounds like a zombie movie. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great podcast. I mean, we were chatting, we actually got to see each other in person, and you were telling us about one of the recent ones that you watched. It's just like, you're going so deep into it. It's super fun. And I fear that you're never going to be able to enjoy a movie ever again.
It has done permanent damage. Yes. But yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your player is having fun, you're a great GM.